Welcome to the GBC Big Three Podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermons. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and joining us as co-host for the first time ever is none other than student pastor Brett Robinson. That was a terrible drum
coming
roll.
Coming in off the bench.
Brett, where have you been all my life? Welcome. Welcome, my dear friend.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, it is.
I'm glad to join. Yeah, it's nice to be here.
It is great to have you. A fresh face on the couch.
Not just cutting the oranges anymore.
We were saying before, this is the moment where the coach goes, Brett, you're off the bench. Like, get in the game.
Yeah, off the bench onto the lounge.
Yeah. Well, mate, it's great to have you.
Yeah, thank you.
And joining us after another cracker sermon on Sunday is Mark Rader, or as I affectionately call him, like no one else does. I want it to become a thing, but the Rev Dogs Rader or Ray Dogs or Ray Dogs Rader, or there's just so many things, so many ways. Rader, we are, what, 2 weeks out from the end of Hebrews?
And we have one more week left.
One more week. Just goes to show how much I'm keeping track. As we kind of come to the conclusion, how are you feeling about this series as a whole and the message that it's been for us as a church in this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that as a preacher, I think it's often really interesting how a series develops over the course of its life, if I can put it that way. this series is no different than others. I think that, you know, as you start to really think about a text and not only what it said to its original audience, but what it says to your audience, between the work of the Holy Spirit and all that kind of stuff, I think you find that there's a fresh word. And I feel that there's been a bit of a fresh word for us, another reminder again about the public participation in the things of God. Yeah. You know, I think in the past I would have talked about Hebrews as kind of an intellectual faith drift, you know, rather than kind of that public commitment to Jesus. Yeah. And so that's just been a fresh thing for me. And I would hope that it's kind of a fresh thing for our congregation too.
Awesome. Well, it's been great. Keen for the big conclusion, the crescendo, so to speak. Well, this week, Mark spoke on discipline as part of our series in the book of Hebrews titled Anchor. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But today, as always, we'll be unpacking three big questions submitted through Slido during our Sunday services. So, guys, let's get into the big three.
All right.
Now, Mark, your overall, idea, the theme of Sunday's message was, you know, once again around, I guess, the difficulties and the challenges and the struggles that the original audience of Hebrews were facing. And, you know, we're able to bring that into our own context because we've got our own things that we're being faced with. But that the message from the author for the community at the time and for us now is that, you know, That is part of the process of us being disciplined and being shaped by God, and that actually we shouldn't be withdrawing in those moments, but almost leaning in to the transformation and the shaping that God does in that space. And I guess for us, or even for myself, I'm reminded of, you know, those classic Christian cliches that we hear when people are struggling, you know, oh, it's all a part of God's will, or God's going to use this for his glory. And they are true and biblical and right. But at times, when they are just words, not always helpful. But there is definitely this invitation for us to be journeying together and supporting each other in those moments of challenge and trial to draw the truth of those cliches, for lack of a better word, out and actually live them. And that's where our first question really lands. How do we support and journey with other believers during times of struggle without simply sharing Christian cliches?
Yeah. I mean, I think, as you said, I think the thing about a cliche, of course, is that it's true, right? That's what allows it to become a cliche.
Yeah.
There's something fundamentally truthful about a cliche, you know, like smile, Jesus loves you. You know, well, yeah, okay, Jesus loves you, and that's a reason for joy.
Yeah.
So fair enough. But they can be unhelpful, of course, in a few key ways. To some degree, they kind of function a bit like proverbs, right? Like proverbs are really short, pithy statements of generalized truth. So they don't apply to every situation, right? And so part of the wisdom of proverbs, and I think of cliches, is timing, right? So when someone is just going through something really hard, that's the wrong time to bust out a cliche, right? You know, that's the time to sit with someone and to listen to them and to allow them to kind of share what's been hard about the situation and circumstances they're going through and that sort of stuff. So I think timing's important.
Yeah.
I think being able to flesh out the cliches, right? You know, like proverbs, you have to kind of think about them a little bit to figure out when's the best time to use them. I think cliches function in similar sorts of ways.
Yeah.
So you don't want to state it like the cliche, and this is how I think when it's really unhelpful, people state a cliche as if that's kind of the end of the argument.
Yeah, that's the Band-Aid on the bullet wound, so to speak.
You know, it's kind of like, well, smile, Jesus loves you. As if, like, what else is there to say? And so I think that there's, you know, you need to unpack that a bit, you know, and just say, listen, we do have a joy that comes from knowing that Jesus is on our side and, you know, that ultimately he will turn these things to good. But I think we need to acknowledge that. That doesn't mean that it's easy while it's happening, all that kind of stuff. And then I think that the third piece about, you know, the usefulness of cliches is that it does function a little bit in relationship. So the closer you are in relationship, I think the more effectively you can use some of those cliches, shall we say, because you've got a relational basis of trust and recognition in that sort of space. Like, you know, you listen to, like, I've often thought about cliches in relationship to sport.
Yeah.
Like, you know, every single interview with the captain of the winning side or the losing side after any kind of game in any kind of sport is essentially the same.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, there you go. But they always talk about cliches.
Yeah.
Right. You know, well, we really played our game, or we weren't able to get into our rhythm, or whatever it might be. But the coach, I guarantee you, the coach does not coach by cliches.
Yeah.
He coaches in specifics, right? And so I think that there's something really important about, we need to recognize the cliches, but then be able to develop the, or think through the specifics when we're kind of journeying with people in those spaces.
Yeah. I think that timing piece is really, like, that stood out for me as well. I think sometimes we find ourselves, you know, you're in a situation that makes us feel uncomfortable, like dealing with someone's, you know, grief or anxiety or fear is a confronting space to be in. And so, but we feel the need to fill it. And I think that's why we pull out those classic Christian cliches, but we don't consider that actually, no, this isn't the right time for that. But we spit them out, I think, in our own fear and discomfort of saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And then we say the wrong thing. It's a beautiful irony.
Well, you know, you say the right thing at the wrong time, and it's essentially saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing about timing.
Yeah, absolutely. Brett, what are your thoughts on this, mate?
Yeah. As Mark said, I think that those comments around the cliche are very accurate and important for us to be mindful of. But thinking about the, you know, how do we support and journey with someone who's going through a struggle? As we've just touched on just there, there is a bit of a vulnerability for us when if we're going to be coming alongside someone who is struggling. And, you know, thinking back on my life and just some of the imagery that's around that is, I think sometimes we can approach that situation in the sense of, okay, someone's in the trenches of life, they're struggling, and that somehow how do we kind of help pull them out of that situation? And so we're kind of out of the trench and helping them out of that situation. And I think probably what might be a more helpful imagery in that space is, rather than pulling someone out of the trench, how can we be vulnerable and climb into the trench with them?
Yep.
You know, sit in the mud, sit in the ashes of life and come alongside them and just sort of journey with them in that space. Be a little bit vulnerable. You know, we kind of expose ourselves to a little bit of risk in that space absolutely. When we kind of do that. And then I think perhaps, you know, some of those cliches that we're talking about, in the midst of all of that, they can be helpful in reminding us of who God is, what he has done for us, the love he has for us, who Jesus is, the hope we have in Jesus, all of those things, which are really helpful reminders when we are in, you know, the mud and the ashes of life and when we're really struggling.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's sort of a bit of imagery that I think can help us journey with people in that space.
And I love that. I'm pretty sure it's Brené Brown actually has, I think she did a TED talk, and she spoke about something very similar. She spoke about the difference between sympathy and empathy.
Mm.
And she said, sympathy is someone's fallen in a hole and you stick your head in the hole and you're like, wow, it really sucks down there. and empathy is climbing into the hole and kind of going, wow, I actually am now experiencing what you're experiencing and I'm going to sit where you sit. And then when you're ready, we can work at getting out of the hole together.
Absolutely.
And she talks about how just people don't want sympathy. People want empathy. So I think you're absolutely right. And like, let's be honest, we all have times of struggle. So even if the context, even if the situation is different, the heart, the experience of the challenge or the hurt, I think we can all relate to. And so, yeah, I think there's an invitation to be vulnerable in our own selves to support those who are vulnerable because of their circumstance.
Definitely.
Yeah, great stuff. All right, well, let's move on to question two. Narrator, I'll come back to you. Obviously, something that this passage picks up is something that we see time and time again in scripture, which is this whole idea of circumstances of suffering or challenges or difficulties, that there's you know, that there's an opportunity for growth in that. That there's, you know, I think instantly, you know, talking about cliches, I'm reminded of, you know, the refiner's fire, and it's like fire's not a delightful experience. It's hot, it hurts, it burns, but there's a refinement that goes through that experience. And obviously this passage and this whole idea of discipline and what the audience of the time were experiencing was around like, hey, like, yeah, this is rough, but actually you were being developed in your maturity, in your resilience, and in your holiness. And I guess what that lends to is the question of, is that the only way in which we as believers actually achieve that growth? Is that the only, I guess, technique that God uses to transform us and reshape us into, you know, the new creation that he's restoring us into? And that is exactly what question two is today. Why is it that maturity and growth, resilience and holiness only seem to be accessible through experiencing times of difficulty?
Yeah, I think that, I think ultimately the reason for that, in terms of my opinion of it, would be that it's when we are forced to grow through struggle that we grow. It is possible to grow when you're not experiencing struggle, but you have to be super diligent. Right? Like it is possible. You know, and there's, you know, you think about the maturity that happens to, you know, children who grow to adulthood. As long as they're, you know, eating relatively healthily and, you know, getting enough sleep and all that kind of stuff, there's a natural maturity that comes and they don't have to try. Like, you know, kids don't have to, you know, strain to grow or to become mature or whatever it might be. That kind of happens naturally. And so there's some natural, I think, growth and maturity that comes as long as we're, you know, kind of doing the basics.
Yeah.
You know, spending time in the Word, spending time in prayer, being with other believers, you know, working away at that sort of stuff. I think you can end up kind of some natural growth.
Yeah.
And I think that if you are deliberate enough, when things are easy, you can be developing certain sorts of, you know, virtues or practices or disciplines. But there's something about resistance that makes a huge difference, right? You know, you think about physical exercise, and again, like, it's resistance that actually develops muscles and...
Again, I'll take your word for it. I'm just not the physical kind. I think we all know this.
You know, but there's something about resistance that's really important.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's hard when you're not going through any kind of struggle, when you're not facing any kind of need, is that there's no resistance. And so it just makes it really hard to build that spiritual muscle.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing coming against you, even in kind of the simplest way.
Yeah.
You know, you can set yourself a task to learn about a particular thing because of your ignorance, and your ignorance creates the resistance.
Yeah.
But you know, like there's nothing quite like some sort of crisis, even if it's, shall I say, crisis small c.
Yeah.
You know, just something that makes you go, ah, I need to work at this, or I need to do better at that, or whatever it is, that I think can provide us with the resistance that we need.
Yeah, absolutely.
To grow. You know, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, in his book, The Psychology of Flow, talks about being in the zone, right? And that to be in the zone, you need an ample level of challenge, but an ample level of skill. And so if the skill, if your skill is really low and the challenge is really high, you just feel anxious, right? But if the challenge is low and your skill is high, you're bored.
Yeah.
And so at some point in time, in order to grow and kind of find yourself in that zone of where you're like, oh, this is a kind of enjoyable struggle, you know, there's the hard times where you're forced to grow, or, you know, or you just end up chucking it all in, you know. But that kind of that zone where you're like, oh, I'm really enjoying this. Like when I first took on the role as senior pastor here, it was hard work. I was learning stuff. I was struggling with stuff. I was trying to figure stuff out. I had no idea what I was doing most of the time, you know, but there was something quite enjoyable about the whole process. It was like, okay, this is hard, but it's kind of good hard. So while it's not the only way that God shapes us, I think there's something fundamental about it.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be surprised. You know, like, again, I mentioned this on Sunday, but I think about, you know, raising kids, and you know, a parent wants their kids to go through hard times, but there's something about a hard time where you can actually speak into their life a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's in the hard times where you actually hope, or I hope, to see character in my kids. It's where I hope to see them make really good decisions. And, you know, and so there's nothing quite so encouraging as a parent as to see your kids go through a bit of a tough time and respond in a way where, like, oh man, that's solid. So there's something really encouraging about that. And I think, you know, leaving aside the, you know, those really big crises, capital C, italicized, underlined, I think, you know, because those can also bring growth. But I think that there's something really valuable about that resistance.
Yeah. I'm reminded, actually, as you spoke, of a message that Andy Stanley gave around creative and innovation in the church. And he made a similar point around companies that come up with the next thing that have been super innovative. And his point was that those companies came against a problem. He's like, you're not going to find, if you don't identify a problem that needs to be dealt with, you're not going to be innovative. You're not going to create the next best thing, the next new thing, the next new idea. He's like, you've got to actually have identified something, a barrier, and that is actually what opens up the opportunity to be innovative. I thought of that. It's like, we're not gonna grow unless we are met with a bit of resistance. Absolutely. Brett, what are your reflections on this?
Yeah, taking what you've just said there and thinking more along that big C crisis, and you touched on this, Mark, on Sunday in your sermon, is the questions that are raised, you know, sort of, is this true? What do I feel about this? What do I think about this? And I think that those sorts of questions and those sorts of crisis moments allow us to challenge the status quo of our life, of perhaps maybe our faith. And it's in those moments. When I was thinking about this question, you know, my mind went back to the fall, you know, the original sin of humanity. And when I read through that story, one of the elements that jumps out to me is this concept of control. As humans, we love to be in control. And say pre-COVID, for most people, or for many, many people, there was a sense of safety and stability in their career. I'm not waking up in the morning thinking that today I could be made redundant or fired. There's a sense of safety and security in my health.
Yeah.
Whilst any of us could get sick at any moment, I don't usually wake up in the morning thinking that, today I could, catch a virus that could kill me.
Yeah.
So living in a pandemic world, all of a sudden there's a sense of control that we don't have anymore. Mm. It's been taken away from us, or more to the point, we've realized that we actually don't have control. Mm. And I think in those spaces that allows us to really ask those big questions and to challenge the status quo of our preconceived ideas about things. And so in that space, we can really, galvanize our faith, so to speak, because, we might mature and grow without those sorts of challenges or crisis, but coming to that place of crisis can really galvanize that as we sort of wrestle with it all.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff. All right. Well, let's move into the third and final question. Now, as we wrap up, Rita, something that you spoke about in your message was obviously around this whole idea of holiness, and that through this discipline, we are, being created holy, which obviously, a lot of things happen in that, it solidifies our connection with our God. Mm-hmm. But you also spoke about how then the world then views us due to that holiness. And, there was a brief reflection on the Israelites in the Old Testament and how the law was given to them so that they could live a holy life, so that when the nations looked at them, they would know that God is their God. And obviously that's the invitation for us as well, but we do live in a world now that is very different. Holiness from a worldly perspective, holds actually some negative opinions. Holiness, when people hear that, they think of self-righteousness. They might even think of, abuse of power, irrelevance, it actually causes a disconnect in a sense, whereas historically it was the holiness of the Israelites, let's say, was to draw people into who God is. And now holiness is almost being turned into something that pushes people away. Now, that's a perception of holiness. That's not what holiness actually is. But that's ultimately where our third and final question lands. How does holiness help us engage the world when the world seems to see Christianity as irrelevant?
Yeah.
Just a light question to wrap
up. That's right. I mean, I think I'd almost answer the question with a question.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. which is... seriously.
You work for me now,
Ray. Gotcha. Understand, Willis. I think, the question would be, why is it important for us to draw the world or be relevant to the world?
Mm.
Like holiness has, I think holiness has, it does have two directions to it, right? So to be holy is to be set apart.
Yeah.
And so we are to live as those set apart in relationship with God. And that life is not just a private, personal, internal devotion.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has a public facing piece. But ultimately, we are living in relationship with God. And therefore, to some degree, the concerns about what the world thinks about it are kind of secondary.
Mm.
Because if we start asking the questions about, what does the world think about us living set apart?
Yep.
That's where you run into the problem that the Hebrews faced, right?
Yeah.
Because the world then was like, you follow someone who was crucified, which is shameful.
Yeah.
Some of your practices don't fit with our cultural component. Like, there wasn't heaps of the doctrine that that people disagreed with early in the piece.
Mm.
It was the fact that they, early Christian communities, looked different than the cultural expressions were meant to.
Yeah.
You know, there was the crossing of socioeconomic boundaries. There was all sorts of that sort of stuff. And so there's something where we have to ask, where's our primary focus lie,
yeah.
if that makes some sense. Mm. Now, having said that, you know, like, we don't want to be offending people for the sake of offending people, right? Mm. And I think that, you know, the church has often been seen as self-righteous, rather than holy.
Mm.
And there's a big difference between those
absolutely.
Things, right? You know, self-righteousness has a condemning stance and posture to the world, whereas holiness doesn't. Holiness is basically saying, we believe that God has created the world and that this is the best way to live, and this is how we're going to live. We're going to live set apart. And if you have questions about that, fine. You know, and will I encourage you to join me? Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But ultimately, if you don't want to do that, okay.
Mm.
If you want to live that way, that's okay.
Yeah.
And my task is to live a holy life.
Mm.
And so I think that the questions of relevance are really tricky for us.
Yeah.
You know, I think when we want to speak the gospel to people, when we want to explain what we believe, then obviously we need to figure out how to do that in a relevant kind of way.
Yeah.
Just working on a lecture for church history, and just was looking at a sermon that a fellow preached where he talked about the rule of Christ in relationship to a card game that was popular amongst the people.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's a wonderful way to be relevant.
Yeah.
Right? To take the rule of Christ and take this popular hobby around Christmas when he was giving this message and basically talk about the various cards that you play and how everyone's a winner. And it was really quite
everyone's
clever.
Everyone's a winner.
Everyone's a winner. Yeah, that's right.
It's my kind of game.
Yeah, that's right. And I just thought, wow, that's a really relevant way.
Mm.
Right? But he wasn't kind of pulling away from the reality of what he was talking about or what he was kind of proposing in terms of faith and all those sorts of things. So I think it's a tricky space for us.
Yeah.
But ultimately, we're called to live a holy life in relationship to, in relationship with God.
Yeah.
And everything else, well, we that's not our primary concern,
yeah.
if that makes some sense. So it is a tricky space.
Yeah.
It is a tricky space.
No, I think that really taps into, I think, you know, definitely for me, when I, you know, talking to young people a lot, I think that is part of the tension that they sit in is because, and I think it's really helpful what you said, like, the primary focus is our relationship with God and our living a life that is holy. And not that the world's response to that is unimportant, but it is secondary. But I think sometimes the two get fused together. And so for a lot of Christians who I talk to, there's a, if you reject what I say, then you're rejecting me, you're rejecting God. And, you know, part of that is true, but it feels that then that says something about the life that I'm living, and they're not able to disconnect those two, like who I am and the holiness that I'm striving to pursue. And then also, you know, the call to share what I know of God. And they're so interlinked that the rejection of one impacts the experience of the other.
Mm. Yeah. And I think that as Christians, we haven't been particularly good at allowing people to reject us while still maintaining relationships.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, or to be able to say, while I think that life with God is a better alternative than how you're living, and I, you know, I don't want to kind of ever let that go.
Mm.
I also don't want to stand there wagging my finger at you saying, you need to change your life or you need to live by my rules or the rules of God, even though you're not in relationship with God.
Yeah.
You know, we need to invite them into relationship with God, not into the rules that we follow, which is what self-righteousness does, right? That whole kind of, these are the rules, and if you've meet these rules, then you're okay with us.
Yeah.
And if you're okay with us, you're probably okay with God, which is not really the gospel at all.
No.
You know, so I think that those are, and so I think the question of relevance is a really important one.
Mm.
Like, I wouldn't want anyone to think that I'm saying, oh, you know, forget being relevant and don't be, you know. It's not about that, but I do think the question of holiness is about my relationship with God.
Yeah.
And then kind of secondarily worrying about how people respond and react to that and how I engage with my culture and my world. You know, the Apostle Paul pursued holiness, but then said, I will be all things to all people so that in the hope I might win some.
Yeah.
So you go, okay, so it It's possible.
Yeah.
Tricky, but possible. So.
Yeah. Is it? He got arrested and was well, executed.
Too. I didn't say. Yeah, but think about how much he grew and matured in that time. Huh? Like, talk about discipline.
All right, fine. Brett, what are your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, so we do live in a world where there are perceptions and stereotypes about Christianity and Christians. And that can be really, really challenging for us.
Yeah.
And I think within that space, it actually provides an opportunity for us. And we have an opportunity to live out our values. You know, as a church, we've looked at values, and values aren't just something that you pin up on a wall, but they're things that you live by. And I can think back to, you know, working within the corporate world and trying to be an example and live out my values as a follower of Jesus in that space. And there were occasions, it didn't happen every day, and you know, or a lot even, but there were occasions when you know, you might get the comment of, wait, you're a Christian, but like, you're not what I would expect a Christian to be. And so there's a real opportunity for us to kind of to break those stereotypes and to break those perceptions that people have of Christians or followers of Jesus.
Yeah.
And then in that space, there's that opportunity. And so once that door is opened, then we do often find questions begin to come about our faith, about what it is we believe. It's like, okay, well, if you're not the kind of Christian that I thought a Christian would be, then like, tell me a little bit more. Like, it's kind of living in a way that provokes curiosity.
Yeah.
And I think in that space, that's where we have the real opportunity to then share the gospel. You know, this is the faith that I have. This is the hope that I have. Mm. This is why I have this hope. And as a result, I try to live out that way. And I think that can be quite a loving approach rather than just sort of saying, oh, well, this is what you ought to believe.
Yeah.
And sort of forcing it upon people.
Yeah. Mm. And I think what's interesting to kind of come back full circle is that not always, but, you know, definitely in a number of my experiences, those moments where people take an opportunity to say, hey, okay, so you call yourself a Christian, is when they're struggling, you know, when they're being met with challenge, when they're dealing with something that is hurtful. And once again, like, that kind of invites an opportunity for growth and development and maturity.
Yeah, I think also in that space, one of the things that I have observed as well is there's almost an acceptance from people that we then are allowed to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And so to be able to say to someone in that space, look, you know, I'm not a perfect Christian. Like, don't, like, I'm not a pin-up poster, you know, of what a Christian ought to be. I do make mistakes in life. Mm. And then it sort of, you know, brings in the whole scope of forgiveness and God's grace. And like, so there's a whole extra element to that rather than just, look, you know, if you really want to be a Christian, then you've got to get your life in order and go to church every week.
Yeah.
And like, you have to kind of jump through these hoops to be called a Christian, which is one of those stereotypes that I think is out there.
The way some people perceive life, perceive a life of in the church and of faith.
Exactly. And so, it's just another, you know, those doors just keep opening up of opportunity. And I think people are more than willing and accepting then as a Christian, when you do make a mistake, you're not just a hypocrite, right? Yeah. You're like someone saying, well, look, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm on a journey. I'm walking. Mm. I'm walking and I'm going to stumble. Mm. And that's part of the journey.
Yeah. Great stuff. Awesome, awesome stuff, guys. Thanks so much for joining us this week's Big Three. Brett, can confirm, will be invited back again. It's been great having you both. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you join us for our online services this Sunday at gbconline.org.au and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. Just a reminder for those of you who are listening to the Big Three today that we now film the Big Three and it's available to be watched on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. on GBC Online. If you've enjoyed the Big Three today, be sure to give us a star rating and subscribe so that you can stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.